Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 11 of the Two Sporting Muppets. You're here with half the hosting team of I'm Greg, and I'd like to introduce my co-host Gray to the microphone.
Hello Greg, how are you going? How's your week been?
Good week, busy week, struggling with a bit of uni going on in the background, but overall not a bad week, mate. Thanks.
Great to hear. No, it's been not as busy in sport, but it's still a fair bit happening. So look forward to having a chat.
Yeah, we're just saying it's a bit of a... We said that last week, ended up going well over an hour, but it is actually a bit quieter this week.
But leading up to a really busy time.
Really good time of the year, certainly in the Australian sporting calendar.
Yep, spring is in the air. Spring has sprung, which goes with it footy finals and a bit of hay fever, but we can cop that for a bit of quality sport. So... No, the AFL finals started last evening.
And the NRL heads into their last round of the season.
Last round with half the match is really important. Going to have a huge bearing on the makeup of the eight. And then the finals next week. So it's full steam ahead.
Looking forward to it. All right, well, let's kick us off. Will we start with...
Well, AFL briefly.
Let's go.
Okay, so last night was the first final, elimination final, up at the Gabba, Brisbane Lions and Richmond Tigers. And Brisbane, to a lot of people's surprise, mine included, got up by 2 points.
Yeah, you were saying last week that you thought Richmond, even though it was in Brisbane, Richmond might snatch that one.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. The Lions have been really fairly consistent team the last four or so seasons. Not chokes, probably too harsh a word, but just not handled the finals. You know, maybe won one and then lost the next one when they had a double chance. A couple of elimination ones. Just something lacking when it came to those big matches. And they were flogged last week by the Demons. And Richmond were favourites. To beat them, Richmond found a bit of form. But last night, it was a cracking match. I didn't see all of it. I was flicking between NRL and League. But 16 or 17 lead changes throughout the match.
That makes for a good game straight away, doesn't it, really, when you hear that stat?
And it was really good because obviously a bit of a shootout until the end of the third quarter. And then when the pressure was on, scoring was a lot harder. So what happened, as I said, the Lions won by 2 points. I think it was 106 to 104. What happened late was Richmond got in front. They got two in front and then or three in front. Then they had a mark to Tom Lynch on a pretty acute angle. He sort of had the banana or kick across his body. So he's kicked it, really high kick, looked like a goal. Goal umpire signaled goal, just to be sure, which is fine. They went up to the video. So the video rules are what should be, unless, because the original decision's a goal, unless it's the evidence is, clear evidence.
Conclusive
evidence that it wasn't a goal, it should stand. So anyway, it was really high. You can only, just line of sight. Was it over the line of the post or not? Anyway, and it wasn't conclusive. I didn't think, and a few other million Australians apparently agree with me. It wasn't conclusive, but yet the video said, yep, no, it's definitely a point. So that was the decision. They changed it to a behind. Ball went up the other end. Brisbane, kicked the goal, got two in front. I think it was a minute or so to go and managed to hang on. So look, Gabba crowd obviously in, raptures. Great result for persistence for the Lions, but obviously Richmond heartbroken. Coach Damien Hardwick not happy. He basically said the video, just get rid of it, was the gist of his comments in the presser after the match.
Nothing like a bit of controversy to make the finals even a bit more exciting. Did you say that was an elimination game?
It was.
So Richmond are out now?
So Richmond are now out.
And Brisbane get a second crack next week.
Brisbane get a second crack. They play the winner of tonight's game between the Swans and the Demons at the MCG, the loser. The winner goes to the prelim. Yeah, so that will be either at the MCG or at the SCG, I imagine.
I would assume so.
So be interesting for the Lions. But yeah, well done to the Lions. They haven't, as I said, haven't had a lot of luck with the finals. But yeah, really, really did what they had to do to get over the line. And as you know, in finals... teams, you just got to do what you got to do. Doesn't matter
whatever
how you
it takes,
do it.
Yeah,
and they managed to do that. Look, disappointing for Richmond supporters, but they've had, they've had their little golden run, haven't they?
The last year has been really, really successful.
Look, Dustin Martin, he played last night, didn't have a huge impact, but the really good players did. Marlon Pickett, for Richmond, he was the last quarter, he was everywhere. Look, usual suspects for Brisbane, Daniel Rich, and the midfielder, whose name escapes me, their gun midfielder. Sorry, I've had a blank. Can't think of his name. But he was fantastic. Richmond, so they can enjoy their off season, and the Lions get to fight another day.
Great start to the finals. So looking forward to the rest of the weekend to see how it pans out moving forward. But yeah, really exciting start to the AFL finals.
Yeah, and next week we'll know exactly, we'll be able to do a preview of what's going on and see who's already made the prelim. So, great time. And I'm not going to talk about the week off, but it was worth the wait.
For such a high-quality game.
AFL are totally stoked with what a quality game it was. Great start.
All right, NRL, as I said, last round, regular round of the season started last night with Parramatta beating Melbourne.
Convincingly as well. Look,
and I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, cemented their spot in the top four.
They have, it looks like. Yep. I think it's very unlikely that they'll be outed from that, Greg. Look, they played really well. It was an important game for Melbourne if they wanted the top four spot. Look, and they came out really firing, but it just didn't work for them. Parramatta were just, I think, too good when it mattered, to be honest. The forward battle was, as always, willing in the first half. Well, it was throughout the match, but really willing, tough forward battle. But Parramatta got on top there, and their backs did the job. Their halves, Moses and Dylan Brown, both played well. Dylan Brown, I think his season, it ended up 22-14. His season has been fantastic. I think last year he made, was it three line of three sort of try assists, and now he's had 20 odd. So really playing well.
Yeah, really positive signs for a long suffering Eels supporter base. They've been there and thereabouts for a very long time and never been able to crack it. Sort of crumble when the business end of the season comes, but really good signs last night moving into the finals for the NRL.
Yeah, look, if it's going to happen, if it's going to happen this year, it should happen. They're as big a chance as they ever have been, put it that way. Commentators, as they tend to do, get excited, and as if they've won the comp already.
Yeah, I read the Sydney Morning Herald article and basically had them as premiers now.
Just getting a little bit excited. A
bit early.
And particularly with recent history. Because at the end of the day, yes, it was an important match, but it's not a be-all to end-all. What tends to happen with Para, they play like that. Next week, when it really matters, they go missing.
And crumble a little bit, yeah.
And I ran into a mate who's a Parramatta supporter this morning, and he was more realistic. He says, yeah, we've been here before. We look $1 million, then the finals hit. Yeah. But a lot's got to be said for form. And they're playing really well.
Going into the finals, yeah.
Yeah, all over the park. Like Sivo, we know how hard he is to stop on the wing. Gufferson is playing really well. Reed Marnie's doing a great job. We mentioned the halves previously. Look, as much as I've never been a huge fan of Campbell Gillard, but he is playing quite well. Their forward pack, Bolo, they're really good outfit. But they're really strong up Parramatta. The thing that's going, if you listed what's going for them, what they have going for them, hard to beat at Parramatta. They've beaten all the top teams. Melbourne twice now. I think Penrith twice. So I guess that's all you can do.
Yeah, they've got the runs on the board this year and really setting themselves up for a good chance in the finals. I have to say, history doesn't serve them well, or recent history, should I say. But for that Eels faithful, and there's many of them out there, let's be honest, it could be, a promising year many. For them.
Yeah, it is, and long-suffering, 986, that's a long time. A
very long time, yeah.
That's the longest drought going.
That said, the rest of the games of the round are interesting in the sense that it will have the results will have a huge impact on how the top eight finishes and potentially even who finishes in eighth place. Still, technically, Brisbane can make it, although it will be difficult for them. They technically could still get eighth over Canberra, or Canberra could maintain that position, which they only got in last week by beating the Seagulls after, I think it was round two was the last time in the eight until last week. So the last round has turned out to be quite exciting and have real impact on how the finals plays out.
Huge impact. So tonight's game at your favourite stadium, Greg. I really look forward to going there one day and showing you around. But the Roosters, that great rivalry we've talked about lots, the Roosters and the Rabbitohs. So if someone was saying, if the Roosters beat the Rabbitohs by 50, which is not going to happen, the Roosters could maybe sneak into the top four.
That's not going to happen. No, I know, mathematically, yeah, I get it.
That's not. No, that's
they're not going to win by 50.
Not realistic at all. But that's going to be a really good game. It's sort of a hard one, isn't it? One the week before the finals. And those two teams could be playing each other in the finals, first week one. So to sort of, you know, have to go that hard and...
Do you put all your cards on the table now? Do you hold back a little bit? Do you...
I dare say both teams probably wouldn't show their whole hand.
I don't think tonight. So.
You'd think, wouldn't
not,
you?
Not knowing they're both guaranteed to be in the finals and both unlikely, apart from the Roosters, but let's be serious. They're not going to be, neither are going to be in the top four. So they're going to be in the 5-8 position somewhere.
And they've got to conserve their energy a bit, isn't it? Because if either of these two teams want to win the premiership, they've got to win four games in a row.
That's right. So I agree with you. I don't think you'll see the full hand played tonight from either team, but both want to win, let's be honest.
Couple of changes. Joseph Suwali is out with a shoulder complaint. We'll talk more about him a little bit later. And then one or two other
is
outs as
Cook
well.
Playing no. or not?
No, what, that was
with
a thing.
With the COVID rules, what's happened
COVID
there?
COVID rule changing? No, regardless, he's not playing.
Still not playing, okay.
Which is fair enough.
And I know the South coach is out.
Yes, Demetrio.
As COVID as well, yeah.
But that's happened a bit this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
So he'll be coaching remotely.
Yeah, look, there'll be plans in place. All the clubs have had those sort of... They've all operated under those conditions throughout the whole season. So I don't think they'll have any impact on Souths tonight at all.
No, look, a few other games. The last one, obviously, is the West Tigers and Raiders. So Raiders need, if they win that, just to seize things up, where they'll finish. I'll just refer, because the actual ladder, the Raiders... So the Raiders, yeah, the Broncos... It's about a difference of, it's a fair bit, 20s, it's about 42 points the Raiders are up on the Broncos. So if the Raiders were to lose though, and the Broncos win, well, the Raiders won't make it. The Broncos will get eighth spot. So it's really important games indeed. Also, if Brisbane, I think, who are the Broncos got? The Broncos got
Dragons.
Dragons. Yeah, so the Broncos, look, Broncos have to win and win well to have any hope.
It is at Suncorp, the game... No, it's not.
No, it's
take that back. It's at Jubilee. It's a St. George home game. It's a Dragons home game. It's at Jubilee.
So you never know. So the Dragons just have to go out there and win well, and anything could happen. You can't see the West Tigers beating the Raiders.
No.
And certainly not by 40 points.
But if the Broncos have a huge win and the Raiders win, but it's close.
Yeah, has to be a big win.
But the Broncos, to give themselves a chance, have to have a massive win over the Dragons.
Yeah, they do. But hey, there's no holding back. They'll throw caution to the wind. So it should be an entertaining game.
It should be very entertaining. We'll see which Dragons turn up this week.
Yes. A couple of less consequential games. Friday, the early game on Friday evenings, Bulldogs and Manly. Look, they both just want the season to be over.
Yep.
Warriors and Titans.
Just want the season to be over.
Yes, they both want the season to be over. Knights and Sharks. The Knights also. Canola should win that pretty comfortably. But the other game of interest is the Cowboys and the Panthers. Now, a little bit of controversy during the week because the Panthers have basically rested, 12 players?
Pretty much their whole first grade team have been given the week off.
Which is rare, but... I've got no problem with it.
I don't either. The Panthers have played consistently all year and put themselves in that position where they finished. They know they're finishing first regardless of this result. Why risk injury or whatever to your top team if you don't have to going into the finals?
Yeah, so in terms of the Cowboys, how it affects them, because they should win and win reasonably well.
It's up there, isn't it? It's in Townsville. The game's
in
Townsville.
The Sharks, if the Sharks were somehow to lose to Newcastle, which I can't see happening.
No, I can't see that happening.
The Cowboys could get second. You never know, but no, I personally can't see that happening. And look, so the Panthers, they're well in front. Was it 6 points ahead on the ladder? So the loss doesn't matter. And why would you risk your top players if you don't have to?
Makes no sense to play them if they don't have to, and they certainly don't have to because of the position they've put themselves in. So credit to them for their season, and now they get the little reward of the 1 week of resting their players.
And for the other teams, like I said, Broncos still a slight chance, but Dragons, Eagles, Bulldogs, Knights, Warriors, Titans, West Tigers. Look, it's a reality of football or any sporting competition. Only half the teams are going to make it. At the start of the year, everyone thinks they're going to win the comp. The reality is only one can, and only eight can make the final. So look, to all those supporters, thanks for supporting the teams. The supporters make the game. Look, and the old cliche, always next year.
My only question is the wooden spoon signed, sealed, and delivered for the Tigers, or is there a chance they can get off the bottom?
If there is a chance, it is extremely, extremely low chance, Greg. The for and against, what would need to happen is this. The Titans would have to lose, so the Warriors need to beat the Titans, and the Tigers would need to beat the Raiders by about 61 points.
Sadly, mate, it's not going to happen.
Look, as we mentioned last week, Greg, I cannot believe that being a Tigers fan and the rubbish we have dished up in our 20-plus years existence, that we've never won the wooden spoon before.
It is hard to believe.
So I've done well to avoid it, but for no longer.
Their time has come.
Right. Look, beauty of sport these days, you can bounce back quite quick.
Well, the beauty of the wooden spoon is only one way to go.
There is.
You can only go up.
You can. However, 16th spot, as a mate pointed out to me, they can finish 17th next year.
Very
Dolphins coming in.
Hadn't thought about that. but that's a good point. No. It's the one year they could actually go backwards.
No, but yeah, only way is up for all those teams. So, you know, enjoy the off season, those players, a well earned rest. And, you know, these days it doesn't, basically after the grand final, they're almost back.
Yeah, they're only gonna have a month, maybe a month and a half off, and then preseason will start up again for them.
The life of professional sportsmen, eh?
That's why they get paid the big bucks, and some of them do get paid big bucks.
Indeed. Now, speaking of that sort of thing, nice little segue.
That was a good segue.
Into Joseph Suwali, allegedly or reportedly offered, was it $10 million, five-year deal?
Five-year, $2 million a year for 5 years to skip from league at the moment.
Now, for those who don't follow rugby league that closely, Joseph Suwali was a schoolboy last year. He only finished. He was with the South Sydney Rabbitohs Rugby League in their junior program. But he also played rugby union at school. Prodigious talent, but he was basically poached by the Roosters. So he didn't play first grade for Souths, and debuted last year. Absolutely wonderful talent. Very athletic, fast in defence, isn't he? Solid.
Absolute superstar in the making.
Potentially. And it looks like will be a superstar. Yeah, sometimes you think, yeah, it could be. People get a little bit excited, but he looks the real package. So offered by the rugby union. Now, we're having a chat, weren't we, Greg? This has happened in the past. For those who remember back in the 2000s, rugby union, they paid big dollars for players, for league players, such as Wendell Saylor, Matt Rogers, Lottie
Takiri.
Takiri, Sonny Bill Williams. And at the time, it used to annoy me then, and it still annoys me, what would happen if rugby union, this is only my personal opinion, if they're silly enough to offer that money, that's their problem, go for it. And if the player, young blokes, offer that ridiculous money, if they want to go, go. What I cannot stand is the rugby league media and hierarchy coming out with, oh, we've got to keep them at all costs. We cannot lose them to the game. Why? They go, another kid comes in and will step up and be just as good.
Look, everyone's replaceable. There's always another superstar coming through the ranks. Just keeping your eye out for it. And, you know, they've done that before. And as you said, if the opportunity is there for the kid to get huge dollars, look after themselves and their family for the rest of their life, kudos to them. Take it.
Yeah, it's just that thing that I remember back in the 2000s, particularly Sonny Bill Williams, this BS of the war chest. The NRL needs to step in and subsidise. What? How is that fair and equitable?
No. I agree. And it's only the loss of one player, and a great player, don't get me wrong, but the league's not going to fall over because one player or two players move over to rugby union. It's part of commercial business.
It is. And so the main thing that annoys me is often it doesn't come to fruition. It's just manager tactics to try and up their price. So that really annoys me. But when they do actually go, they always come back anyway.
Usually.
usually. Who didn't come back? Matt Rogers, I'm not sure.
He came back to the Titans.
Wendell Saylor came back. Takiri came back. Sonny Bill came back.
You're right. All those major names from the 2000s, they all came back.
And why? Because in our opinion and their opinion, rugby league's a better game. So, I just get really annoyed with this. Oh, we cannot lose them. We've got to throw the kitchen sink at them to keep them. No, we don't.
No, I agree. I think let them go. It's not going to destroy the game. It's only one player. They're all replaceable. There's another superstar, and we've talked about that before. You know, there's always the greatest of all time until the next greatest of all time comes along.
Yep, that's right. And back when it happened the first time, we can't... how can we lose Sonny Bill Williams? He went, and NRL thrived. It still continued.
It moved forward.
Surprise, surprise.
Nothing changed. The competition was still there, still competitive. Fans didn't go away because one player left or moved on. It is what it is.
Yeah. Look, and personally, I don't think Suwali in league is great potential. What has he done yet?
Nothing yet. It's all on potential. This whole conversation is around his potential, not his achievements.
Hasn't represented, hasn't won a competition. Will most likely be selected in the World Cup team.
You'd think so.
I think
based on form, you think he'd be picked in the squad.
If he's fit, so yeah, he's got a lot to do and achieve. So, and Origin obviously in the future. So yeah, I'll be very surprised if he did go. But if he does, yeah, I'll just cringe if I hear the usual rubbish that gets trotted out, which it probably will.
It probably will. But I'm with you. Let him go. Enjoy his time. If he comes back, all the better. If he doesn't, then there'll be another player that fills that role somewhere.
Absolutely. So, but your opinion, listeners, we'd love to hear it. If you totally disagree with me and just believe we can't be letting prodigious talents go, send us an email.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what you've got to say. If you think the NRL as an organisation should step in and partly fund through some sort of, you know, inverted commas, war chest to stop these players moving to other leagues.
Yeah, and just give us some reasons why, because often, you know, people make good points that we haven't considered. So by all means, do that. We're happy to have a chat about it.
Love to hear your feedback. Week. Yeah, no, I agree.
Moving on, Greg. Tennis. We mentioned in previous weeks, US Open time.
US Open started.
It has started. Men's singles. Kyrgios is through to the third round.
He's won his first two, yep.
Overnight. He, as usual, a bit of controversy. Oh, look, I don't think it was anything huge in his second round match, but it was mainly mouthing off at his own box.
Look, that's the problem. Even small things for Kyrgios now gets blown out of proportion, and, you know, because of his questionable behaviour in the past, let's be honest, you know, even when something small goes wrong, it makes a headline
gets
now.
Magnified.
And that's a bit sad. It gets, you know, overblown now, and that's a bit sad.
It is. But you're right. It just brings it on himself, doesn't it?
He does.
Yeah, it gets magnified. And but I think Todd Woodbridge, I read something briefly this morning. He just says, you know, like his girlfriend, whoever it was, getting abused. Why doesn't she just walk out?
Yeah.
That's what she probably should do. You know, try and get through to him how petty and petulant it's been. But anyway, look, great talent. And one thing I noticed, his first round match, he's getting a big fan base. He's getting very popular.
Yeah, look, I think he's outgoing, over-the-top personality would suit many Americans.
Yes. Without saying too much. What are you implying there, Greg?
Oh, I just think, you know, the nature of the exuberance in which he has and the energy in which he brings, not always positive, but just the energy he brings, it's in the vein of John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors and those sort of, you know, Andre Agassi in his very young days, those sort of players that really put themselves out there. I think that appeals to a lot of the American sporting audience.
Yeah, right. And the Americans love those sort of sports stars, don't
they? Yeah.
And you're right. And when I say fans, they're there. They want to see him. They want to see him explode.
That's it.
Don't get me wrong.
It's part of the show.
Yeah. You're right.
It's part of the performance.
The package. Yeah. Pack of a pack. So look, and that can't be bad. Look, financially, that can't do Kyrgios any harm at all.
No.
And look, it's the way he rolls. I don't think he's going to change that sort of...
It goes up and down, but it's part of who he is. Like a lump, it's just who he is as a person and as a sports person. So, it you know, you get curious, that aspect of him comes with it.
But tennis-wise, I think he's slowly starting to reach his potential, which is...
Look, the talent, we've said this over and over again, the talent is undeniable and always been there. It's just how do you manage all the peripheral stuff that goes on for him and really focus when it counts.
But hopefully, you know, he keeps going and we'll see what happens the next week or so. The ladies, So Serena Williams is still alive and kicking.
So all the attention's been around Serena. She announced before the US Open this she'd be retiring whenever she loses. This would be her last match. And she's actually won in the first and second round. She's through to the third round.
That's
getting
impressive.
Huge crowds and huge support in the US. I guess everyone's turning up in case it's her last match ever. And she'll be considered by many as the best female player of all, and some the best player of all time when you look at her record and her achievements and what she's won in the modern day.
Outstanding. Look, Margaret, she obviously wants that Margaret Court record, which is, what, 24?
24, I think it is,
23.
Yeah.
But you can't compare, like, and this is taking nothing away from Margaret Court.
As a player.
But back in her day, it wasn't nowhere near as competitive as it is today.
No, to compare eras, and we say this about sport all the time, to compare eras is near impossible.
And back then, tennis just, I know this might sound disrespectful to our Australian great tennis heritage, but back then too, nowhere near as many countries played it, had as many people playing it.
Definitely.
And I mean, it was fairly much Europe, a European, North American, Australian, you know, Australian, New Zealand thing. It was only later then, with a few South American players, but then the amount of people playing it, you know, I guess it's socio-economic type thing, was opened up, and yeah, there's lots more players playing and talented players. So yeah, I just think to compare with Margaret Court's thing, it's nigh on impossible.
No, I agree with you. I don't think you can genuinely compare the two. And look, in my mind, Serena is the GOAT. She's the best, certainly the best female player ever, and possibly the best player ever when you look at her record in the era she's playing and the amount of matches she's had to play.
Durability. What, she 40? Like she's 40?
She must be close.
I'm pretty sure she's 40 and a mother, of course.
Yes.
Just outstanding.
Yeah, I'm huge. I think she's amazing. I can't speak highly enough of her as an athlete. She's top shelf for me. She's amazing.
And it'll be interesting. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be a fairy tale if she went all the way?
I think that would be the ultimate fairy tale. If she made the final, the reaction would be unbelievable. And it would be the true fairy tale end to a phenomenal career.
And not beyond the realms of possibility.
No, it's not beyond. She knocked out the number two seed in the second round. So straight away, that opens a draw up for her progress through in terms of quality of players.
Definitely. Look, probably the fact she doesn't play as many tournaments in terms of endurance-wise, it might be a stretch, four or five games?
Four matches.
But anything's possible.
Anything's possible. And keep our eyes closely on that because I think it's really exciting. It's really promoting the US Open and tennis again, front and stream media again at the moment, which is great.
Great time of year, as we said. Speaking of the US, Greg, it's about to start in a few sports. NFL kicks off, I think it's next week. NFL, look, it's becoming increasingly popular in Australia. I was never a huge fan of it, never had much time for it until last three or four years. My son also loves it, and I've become a big fan.
Yeah, so I'm jumping on that bandwagon. I haven't been a huge fan up until, and I do love American sport, as you know. Haven't been a huge fan of the NFL, but I'm certainly going to try and jump on the bandwagon this year and jump in and see what all the excitement's about.
Oh, yeah, the characters in it, the tactics, the games. Look, watching a whole game of it can be a stretch. Is it ESPN on pay TV? They have the Red Zone Monday mornings where they cross to all the games and update you on time. Yeah, it's just a great package. Really exciting to watch. And the athletes are some of the world's best, if not the best. It's incredible to watch.
So, no, I'll be looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to me picking a team to start with. Just talking to you about that off air. You know, I have to choose an NFL team.
So any listeners?
Any suggestions out there for me?
If you have a suggestion, because if you Google it, you will find a few that there is a few articles that equate a team to like an Australian team. So if they're a Toffs type team, perhaps New York Giants, really struggling working class team, there's heaps of those in the NFL. You know, Pittsburgh or someone like that. Just a crap team, although not crap now, but Cincinnati Bengals, New York Jets, and all other sort of teams that you should consider. So we'll see how you go, Greg.
I'll let the listeners know next week what I've come with, but if you've got any suggestions or can point me in the direction of where I might know, influence my decision, flick us an email. Love to hear your thoughts out there and who you're following in the NFL as I jump a bit late, but jump on this bandwagon.
So just remember, so Greg's a St. George Illawarra supporter.
Dragon supporter.
So if you think of an NFL team that equates to that for Greg, let us know and he'll pick one of them.
I will, and let the listeners know next week.
Now, last US sport we'll have a quick chat about is it's starting to get towards the pointy end of the baseball season, the MLB. They play, as we know, a huge amount of games, 162, whatever it is. They're well over the 100 mark now, getting about, I think there's about 40-odd games to go. Look, the big teams are really stepping up. Now, for those who don't know, a bit like the NFL, they have two leagues in baseball, the National League and the American League. And so, and it sort of separates some of the really champion teams. Like, for instance, the New York, my team, the Mets and the Yankees. My team are in the National League, Yankees in the American League, that sort of thing. But look, the big teams are rising to the top. The Yankees are having a really good season. They're top of their division, and I think their league. The LA Dodgers, they've been really consistent. They're also high up. Now, my team have stepped up, and they've had a few rough seasons, the Mets, but they're leading their conference or division, whatever it's called. But the Atlanta Braves, last year's winners, are also in the same five-team or six-team little division, and they're breathing down their necks two games behind them. So it's going to be a really exciting finish. Look, the final structure in baseball, I forget how it fully works, but obviously the winner of each league or the top two or whatever, then they have wild card games, which is just a one-off game for a spot in the official playoffs. Yeah, so look, it'd be interesting how it pans out the next few weeks. So it normally starts, end of September, October, their playoffs start, and the World Series sort of mid-October. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Look, as a sport, it's cricket, obviously, it's similar to cricket. It's 3 hours or so. They're having a bit like our 2020 cricket, meant to be 3 hours, which is very rare now. Tends to take nearly 4 hours for a game.
I was going to say, it's a bit longer than 3 hours. Yeah.
And the administrators, I know, have been trying to quicken it up. But so, yeah, it can be, you can get a boring game now and then, which can be quite a little bit excruciating. But you get a half-decent game,
it's a good sport. I like baseball. It's grown on me over the years.
And particularly, a bit like cricket, it's a sport where you can have it on and you sit and watch an innings or so and you go and do something and have it on the background and catch up.
And come back to it. Yeah.
So it's a good watch for that. But once again, some really good athletes and can be really exciting game. So, yeah, we'll see in the next month or so how the Major League Baseball pans out.
Moving on, sport games that slipped completely under the radar. Cricket.
Oh, cricket. Yes, what, in the UK, South Africa, and England?
Surprisingly, you might not be aware, because Cricket Australia seem to have done everything they can to not announce, promote, or even recognise these games are on. But Australia actually played Zimbabwe in two one-day internationals in Australia in Townsville in the last week.
I must say, Greg, I was aware, but that full stop. I did not watch a single delivery.
And I have to say, I did not either. As a cricket fan, I didn't watch 1 second of it. I am aware Australia won the series, won both games, the second one particularly convincingly. I'm not even sure if there's a third game. I think it might have only been a two-game series.
Maybe only two. Look, I think the second game was on a Monday or something, was it?
Wednesday.
But I know I saw something in the highlights, and obviously very not well attended. Obviously played up north because of the warmer weather this time of year.
But it's also Cowboys territory in terms of the rugby league, who are well and truly cemented in the top four or close to it at the moment and having a really good season. So to get any attention away from their rugby league team at the moment would be really challenging in Townsville, I would imagine.
One thing I guess it does do, Greg, we spoke last week, is it's good for Zimbabwe because they need to play against the good teams. But two things. A, it's the timing of it and the fact that it's 50-over cricket, which we just talked about last week.
I'm not sure why they chose Townsville. Why not go to Darwin or somewhere that doesn't have still tropical weather but doesn't have a distraction of a local team or sport?
And they have played a couple of test matches up in Darwin, haven't they?
International cricket in Darwin before. So there must be a ground that's at least suitable for international cricket. So I question why the games took place at all, but than why in Townsville, where it's a huge rugby league town in the middle of a very successful rugby league season. Yeah. They're not going to get much traction with that happening at the moment, sadly.
No, but it didn't seem to worry Cricket Australia, did it?
No.
It went ahead. How successful it was, I'm not sure. I know the game was a bit closer on the first game.
The first game.
But once I heard Zimbabwe were batting first, it was always going to be... The score was never going to be that high, was it?
No.
And I think Zimbabwe batted first both games. So, I think?
No, I'm not sure.
So, anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
Like I said, it certainly didn't...
We'll move on. We've acknowledged that it existed. We didn't watch it, but it was there.
It was played. It was played. And Australia won it 2-0. But look, some worthwhile experience for those Zimbabwean players and their whole cricket structures, you know, in a rebuilding phase.
Very much so. So they do need the opportunity to travel and play against the best teams to continue to develop. It'd be good to see Zimbabwe back on the international stage properly again.
But in terms of cricket, we discussed a few weeks ago, it's going to be full on fairly soon.
Not long away at all.
Once the footy finishes, because the T20 World Cup
is in Australia. That will be full on very quickly.
Yeah, and then the test matches after that. And then Australia goes to India very soon after the
early
cricket season.
Early in the new year, yeah.
So, you know, plenty happening on the cricketing front. Right, Greg? I think that might be it. This is one of our shortest...
That might be it for the week.
Look, we know that there would be a few things happening here and there that we haven't covered. Look, we mentioned briefly last week the women's... Also, the AFLW and the NRL have both started and are going well. Really exciting. I watched most of, I think it was Dragons, Newcastle and Broncos, someone last week. Really good games. They're really good to
really
watch the Women's Rugby League.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, so look, they're only very short seasons, as we know, but that's continuing on. And this season's a good one because it coexists with the NRL. You know, so they can have a curtain raiser, or some games were actually after. So Titans and whoever they played last week, it was the men's, the 4-6 game, and the women's was actually after.
Played
that.
The one after, yeah. I hope as the women's game develops, the season gets a bit longer. It's a very short season.
Well, it will, because there's extra teams.
As more
next
teams
year.
Come in, yeah. One other sporting I will mention, which doesn't involve Australia, but the Argentina rugby union team.
Yes.
The Pumas actually defeated the All Blacks in New Zealand last week, which is a huge upset win for Argentina. We mentioned a few weeks ago that they'd beat Australia in Argentina. They're now travelling and beat New Zealand last week in New Zealand. So that's a huge win for Argentina and Argentina rugby.
Momentous, that is. What's wrong with the All Blacks at the moment? Are they playing really poorly, or are the other teams
I
just
honestly
stepped
don't
up?
Know. If they've got players out, it's just a rebuilding phase. I'm not sure, Gray.
Because the next World Cup's not far away, is it?
No, it's not.
That's interesting. But, look, yeah, great achievement by the Pumas. And we can't forget, of course, our Wallabies, who we beat the Springboks last week in Adelaide in a confidence-building win. And I think we play this weekend.
I think we do play this weekend.
At the new stadium.
At the new, my favourite new stadium, at Allianz Stadium.
At Allianz Stadium. I think it's on the Saturday evening.
I'm pretty sure it is.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
So a bit of rugby going on. We'll update that next week.
Yeah, we'll give a bit of a fuller update. Oh, look, just briefly, Greg, something we did touch on. No surprise, Australian golfer Cameron Smith.
Signed with the LIV Saudi Arabian.
Yes.
Backed league.
Controversial, obviously. We might have a chat, a bit more depth in upcoming episodes. It's one of those funny things. I'm obviously don't think it's a positive move. I just think ignoring that country's, you know, human rights record. But I will concede it is fair enough to ask where you draw the line. If you're going to say no to everything they do, well, we're going to have to walk everywhere.
Correct.
You won't be putting petrol in your car. That sort of thing. So... Yeah, look, I think it's definitely something that we can...
I think it's worth a conversation. And I heard Cameron Smith interviewed about that decision. And as he said, it was one of those opportunities that financially and commercially too good to refuse. How could he say no to for himself and his family? How could he possibly say no to it? And from a personal point of view, how could you object to that?
Oh, absolutely.
So I can completely understand why he made the decision he did, whether I agree with it or not. We can have a chat about that. And the ethical stance people take against a league supported and backed by the powers in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it?
It's easy to make an off-the-cuff decision. Yeah, a bit more deeply and it becomes a bit more challenging.
It does. Look, yeah, it's the old Kerry Packer's famous statement, you know, when you only meet 101 Bond in your life. When Bond brought, Channel 9 for $1 billion and sold it back to him for $300 million a few years later. Yeah, look, so Cameron Smith, obviously well-paid and, you know, financially well set up anyway, but more so now. Hey, you know, it's huge, huge money. It sets up his whole life. So he's made the decision, which he's entitled to do, and play that tour, and, you know, he's going to earn a hell of a lot of money. How it will pan out with the whole PGA versus that tour thing and all that.
Moving forward, it's been interesting to see. Yeah. Be a conversation for another day. It's probably something we need to plan and have a chat about.
I think so. All right.
All right, that's our wrap for the week.
Okay. Like I said, a little bit shorter than... although it's still 40-odd minutes, Greg, so it's all... as we say, always something to talk about.
Always something to talk about. All right, Gray, I thought this week we'd have a chat about something that's a bit topical after a game of rugby league last week. That is head injuries and the physical nature of the rugby or the league, the football code, should I say, in Australia. And it comes up for topic of conversation on a regular basis, but there's quite a nasty incident, certainly visually, in a game involving the Roosters and the Melbourne Storm last week. And Rick Radley got knocked out as part of a tackle, but was actually convulsing.
Yep, convulsing on
the ground.
His eyes are rolling around in the back of his head.
It was not a good look. It was quite distressing to watch.
Very.
I hear, you know, Victor is recovering and will recover fully, but I was thinking about the ongoing nature of head injuries and the nature of the sports in which we follow and the physical nature of them, and then, you know, players as they retire and move into their later years.
Yep.
And the question over the duty of care that leagues have to protect the players, who are sometimes their own worst enemy. They are the ones that want to get back out there and play. And, you know, I was just saying, I still think there's a bit of a macho mentality about proving yourself and I'm tough enough to keep going, and instead of looking after yourself and the longevity of your life over, you know, that period of time. So I thought we'd just have a chat about, you know, what have leagues done so far? What could they do more of? What do we think needs to be done? Things like that. Because I think it's a topic that as people become more informed and more educated, it could come back to bite the leagues financially.
I don't think there's a could, Greg. Look, probably starting, just going back, look, things have progressed and thank God they have. But is there still long to go? Still a long way to go, and I think probably there is. Look, I've heard Mark Geyer as one talking about this. As little as 20 years ago, if some bloke was knocked out and they couldn't continue the game, the attitude in the dressing room would be like, oh, that's someone we don't want to go in the trenches with.
A bit soft.
He's going to let us down when it matters. So it was a whole badge of honour. And as you said, the players are the worst enemies. You know, eyes rolling in the back of their head. 2 minutes later, I'm right. Let me back on there. Yeah, like I'm going to stay on. That sort of mentality. And as you said, your players definitely their own worst enemies. And fortunately, how long would you say? How long the HIA has been in for? Not that long.
Only 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, hasn't been.
And I know
long.
It's evolved this year, where there's an independent medical review now watching the TV, who can override the trainer and enforce that a player comes off for the mandatory 10-minute check or 15-minute check it is.
The check, that's right. Who does the check? The team?
No,
or
I believe...
Or independent?
I think it's independent. Right. I could be wrong about that. Please email us if you know, but I think it's an independent doctor.
Be pretty useless if it's not.
If it's the team, then you, what a joke. Makes another joke of it.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
For that, mandatory assessment. And
so basically, for listeners who aren't aware of rugby league, if there's a head injury or head clash or head knock, there's an on-field check by the trainer. They have a routine they go through. If the player passes, generally they can stay on the field, but that clash is also reviewed by an independent doctor watching the screen, who can contact the referee and insist that player be taken off.
Yeah. So obviously it takes a little bit of time for the doctor to look at the footage.
There's often a play or two that passes between the injury and the initial check.
A couple of minutes sometimes.
And the player being told to go to the head injury for a head injury assessment off the field.
And there's even been a little bit of That's good. That's a good thing.
And I think that's a good thing. That's the game heading in the right direction.
And also, obviously, they go and do their HIA, you know, in the dressing sheds, and quite a lot of them fail. So obviously, I'm confident that the test is thorough and, you know, is...
And that's why legit. I do think it's independent, because of the significant number of players that fail that and don't return for the rest of the game. Again, a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise, they'd just dodgy it, wouldn't they?
No, oh, the teams would, yeah.
You know, grand final, James Tedesco. Of course, you know, if there wasn't an independent doctor to do the HIA, of course he'd pass.
He'd never be coming off for anything.
That's right. So, yeah, totally a good thing. And well done for bringing it in. Probably should have brought it in sooner, but, you know, they're trying to protect the players. And clubs, most of the clubs are really on board with it. We've mentioned the Roosters a lot in recent weeks. They are the benchmark.
They seem to be. That said, they've had a lot of players with significant ongoing concussion issues.
Yes. Boyd Cordner, obviously Victor Radley now, Jake Friend, you know, trying, and they've handled it really well. But is what's happening enough, I guess, is the question, isn't it, Greg?
And is that the solution, or is that just the band-aid to a bigger problem in terms of the rules of the game, the style in which the game is played? Could we be looking at other things to protect players? And not to take away the physical nature of the game. I know that's what spectators like. That's one of the things that, you know, makes rugby league what it is and exciting, is it's such a physical, brutal game. And I respect that. But could it be modified to significantly reduce the chance of head injuries?
Yeah.
And you said this to me earlier today, there's always the accident. And that could happen in every sport. And I fully acknowledge that.
It does happen. But, yeah, there's a lot that aren't accidents, though, isn't there?
It seems to be.
And could there, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. Could we be doing more to reduce that?
I know last year there was an attempt to change the rules. It happened over what they referred to as Magic Round, where all the teams play in Brisbane for a weekend. Yep. And there was a crackdown on...
A ridiculous crackdown.
Anything above the shoulders was an instant sin bin send-off.
It got almost... They went so far into it, it went the other way, didn't it?
And it failed miserably.
Lasted 1 or 2 weeks and that was it. They just threw that out. And it was back to, you know, almost back to square one, wasn't it?
It was.
Okay, so currently, Greg, obviously, a tackle above the shoulders is illegal and is penalised, you know, depending on the nature of the viciousness of it. If it's you know, warrants more than a penalty, so it's quite malicious or intentional, obviously a player can be sent from the field and those sorts of things. Is that enough, though? Is it being consistently policed?
I think it's enough as long as it's implemented consistently.
Yep.
And that's where I think it falls down in the NRL. They just don't seem to be able to have a consistent approach between games, much less between weeks, of enforcing it.
Recent memory, isn't there? Like, we just read an article about Big Nelson from Melbourne. That was it 10 different incidences, only been suspended 4 times.
Of attacking the head of another player?
Yep.
Intentionally? Not accidents, intentionally. 10 times, and has only been suspended 4 times. Now, if the NRL is serious about protecting players' head injuries to support them in later life...
Yep.
Then that's not showing any support at all. That's sweeping under the carpet.
Yeah. And the thing is, why? Because they have the NRL and like the AFL have a match review committee. So, okay, some things might be missed on the field. Not too much now with the video, but they can be. But the next day or whenever they review the game, surely anything like that. So the one we're talking about with Nelson, that was a Cameron Munster one. Yeah, with an elbow to a head on a player on the ground. But nothing done about them.
Nothing. There's no consequence for that at all.
So that inconsistency, it opens them up, I think, to down the track. Well, why was that allowed and this wasn't?
Yeah, I just think the NRL is opening themselves up for legal challenge in the future from ex-players, as, you know, they do suffer from head clash related injuries and illness
CTE.
later in their life.
Yep.
You know, are they going to come back to the NRL and question, was there a duty of care? Were they protected within the limits of a physical game? And we all, and I know the players accept that going into rugby league.
Yep.
But within that, there's boundaries around, you know, head injuries and protection from head injuries. And is the NRL doing whatever they can to protect the and have their implement their duty of care towards the players around head injuries on a consistent basis. And I know, and you'll be able to fill me in a bit more, the AFL have cracked down more significantly than the NRL, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, they're really good. Their policing of the rules is really strict. You know, if you even looks like you might have brushed a bloke's head, 90% of the time you receive, that's a penalty, a free kick is awarded to the other team. Yeah, any signs of concussion, they're really good. They're off the ground.
They, from a distance, and I admit that, seem to have implemented their interpretation of protection of the head. And look, it's a physical game, not as physical as rugby league, but I'm not questioning it's a physical game. But they seem to have implemented far more harshly, but more consistently.
Yep. No, very much so.
The protection of players' heads with head clashes on tackles and the like. Yeah,
so, but in general terms, hip and shoulders are pretty much banned now. But any sort of bumping, you know, in a contest for the ball, if you hit the player's head, you're looking at 4 or 5 weeks.
So even if the player's bending over...
Yep. It's duty of care, they make it very clear, the duty of the care is not to touch the head. So look, in the past, 15, 20 years ago, if a player was going for the ball, hip... It was basically just too bad. Okay, you're going for the ball, you get in the way. Whereas now, it's no. So they changed it. There wouldn't be a free kick. Whereas now, okay, yes, he was bending. And some players duck a lot. Now the rule is too bad for the tackler's onus is on them to not make contact with
the head. So the responsibility is on the tackler, basically, to avoid any contact with the head, regardless of the position the other player's in with the ball or...
Yeah. So, you know, a bump or a tackle, if it goes too high, that's it. You know, there's at the minimum, a free kick and very likely to be suspension. So does that mean, are there still head injuries? Of course there are.
Of course there are.
As we said, because there are accidents, there are people slipping and whatever. But now there's certainly, very little of people, any intentional contact with the head of players.
That's a good thing. And it hasn't detracted from the quality. We were talking earlier how good the finals are at the moment, the first game of the finals are. So it hasn't detracted from the game. They haven't lost any supporters by becoming stricter on that interpretation of the rule and implementation of that rule. They're still getting, you know, 70, 80,000 people to the MCG to watch an AFL game. So it hasn't detracted from the quality of the game. I just feel the NRL is dragging their feet a little bit in this area. And look, they have made progress, as we were saying before, and I acknowledge that. They really have. But I think they've still got some way to go. And I think the administrators need to make some brave decisions to protect the future of the game.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question would be, well, okay, they made that move in the magic round. So why did they just stop? Well, just because they must have known before they did it, they're going to cop heat from the clubs and maybe fans and spectators.
You would think but you know, you stand strong for a few weeks and the players will change their tactics. The coaches will change the way the teams play. The supporters will get used to it like they have in AFL and the game will move forward. It was not going to kill the game. It might make some slight changes to some tactics, but changes should be made anyway. No sport apart from boxing should you be attacking the head.
No. And I think it would have been a messy month or so afterwards.
Absolutely.
And then they would have slowly adapted.
Their stupidity was to do it in the middle of a season.
Yeah.
They need to make those changes and communicate that clearly and new expectations in the off-season. Trial it and implement it during trial games.
Players
know exactly what's going on. Coaches know exactly what's going on, how it will be interpreted, and then ready for the season. Not you know, 5, 6, 7 rounds in, which they did that year. Yeah. That was probably what they got wrong.
Yes. Yeah. They need to stay the course. I guess the only thing is, what in terms of sending players off, whether it was an accident or not would have to come into it, probably, I guess, wouldn't it? Because I guess the only danger then is there's total accident, bike gets hit in the head accidentally. What then?
But you're saying in AFL that accidents, it's still the duty of care on the tackler. Yeah, yeah. Accident or not, you look, you know, you've got to judge where the player's falling, you know, and be responsible for that. Now, that's probably a little... No, maybe it's not harder in NRL.
Yeah, interesting how, you know, how they'd sort of decide that, whether it's obviously penalty regardless, but whether it's, yeah, the sending off rule, I guess, would be, I'd have to look at pretty closely. Because as we know, a send off in rugby league, it does detract often, nearly often, you know, spells it, changes the result of the game.
Absolutely. But like all sports, if there's a change in the way it's officiated, in change interpretation, the players will adjust.
Of course, they always do.
And so you just need to be patient for a little while.
Yeah, that frustrated me. I just thought for it to go the way they did, where, like you said, very innocuous, but they were head high, were sent off or sin binned at the minimum, and then just to throw it out 2 weeks later.
That was...
Yeah, I just think, you know, if they had been more serious and just, like you said, at least 4 or 6 weeks. And I'm sure the teams, as thick as some of them are, they would have got the message eventually.
Look, I think the other thing, there's more and more ex-players standing up and saying something's got to change.
Yeah.
That the head injuries are a concern.
And look, and as we know, Peter Fitzsimons is the biggest advocate, you know, ex-Wallaby, and also, you know, a very well-renowned journalist and author. But he's one of the biggest advocates for it. I've seen over the years, you know, well, Steve Folks donated, his brain was donated, and you know, he had signs of dementia, possible CTE. I know Jeff Bagnall played for the Parramatta and Gold Coast, among other teams. He was struggling. Look, there's been some good documentaries about it. It's real. It's going to continue, obviously, in physical sport. It's always going to be there. But as you're saying, Greg, is the NRL doing enough to reduce it as much as possible?
Yeah, I think they've got a way to go, to be honest. I think it may, you know, for a number of players, and I hate this, but, you know, take legal action and sue and get a huge payout from the NRL around their duty of care or lack thereof and the injuries that have led to dementia and CTE, as you said, moving forward into their later life, directly related to their playing time. It may take that sort of extreme event to make the changes that are needed, but it's the writing's there, so I'm not sure why we're a bit slow about it.
Yeah, you're right. The writing is there, and as we also have discussed before, the NRL don't have the bottomless pit of money that the NFL in America have.
No, and the NFL have dealt with this and are dealing with it, where players have had big payouts, but they are far more financial position than the little NRL in Australia. So I think the NRL needs to be aware of that and look at those cases overseas and how that could relate to rugby league.
Yes.
And then the ongoing impact that could have
Look,
to the sport.
And not saying, you know, I think putting the head in the sand, not quite that extreme, but yeah, just doing what they're doing now and just leaving it at that, hoping that that'll be enough. You'd hope they're not thinking like
that. I hope they haven't. Think they've made a few small changes and it'll just go away. I think they still can do more.
Yeah.
And I think they can do more and not detract from the game. Yep. The game won't go anywhere. I think they're scared it'll die in, you know, popularity, but I don't think that'll happen. I don't think there's anything it's not going to be replaced. It's just going to change. And I think they're just going to be brave enough to make decisions to protect their players and to protect their product long term.
Yeah. Look, and just need to ignore the dinosaurs that come out. Oh, the game's getting soft. Have a look at the game, the way it's played. It's not soft.
It's faster.
It's probably harder than it's ever
been. They're stronger. They're fitter than they've ever been.
You know, look, I'm sorry. Whacking blokes over the head, if you judge the toughness of the game on that, well, yes, that's the way the game was years ago, but it's not now. And I don't think it's soft at all.
No, I don't think it's soft. I don't think you can say it's soft in any way, shape or form.
No, that argument annoys me, actually. You know, what, you allow blokes to be hit in the head and that's
part of
makes
the
game better.
No, I agree. No. Look, if you've got an opinion on this topic, flick us an email. That's twosportingmuppets@gmail.com. That's number twosportingmuppets@gmail.com. It's something Gray and I have talked about over the years on and off. It's certainly, you know, as fans and spectators, I think that incident last week brought it back to my attention again, was watching that game, and I felt for Victor Adley on the ground and his family watching on as well. And look, luckily he is going to be okay. But the incidents like that that show you how physical the game can be, and can we be doing something to protect players?
And also, there is still some ex-players in the media that haven't moved on. You know, like you said, he was up, up and about at the end of the game, talking all that, and quite rightly, a few of the commentators were saying, you know, there's no way he'll be playing for a while, and those suggestions, oh, he's looking okay. You are kidding.
Yeah, and I don't think that helps when the media gets involved and make comments like that. It puts pressures on players well to come back. You know, you've got certain ex-players that are considered legends, in inverted commas, saying, oh, you'll be right, get out there. And that, I think that adds another layer of pressure that's unnecessary to a player.
Absolutely.
But luckily, a lot of it's based on external medical advice now, and the players don't get direct say in whether they play or not. And I think that's a good thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be taken out of their hands, because 9 out of 10 times they'll be up for it. And open themselves up to further injury and serious, you know, can be serious lifetime consequences. But as you said, Greg, look, yeah, love to hear our other listeners' views, what you think. But yeah, it is something that's certainly not going to go away, though, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, it'll be maintained on the agenda, and that's a good thing as well for the health of the players, which will add to the longevity of the game.
Yeah, we just want to see the game thrive. And look, I'm a little bit worried the last 12 months, because ever since I've been following league as a little kid, I've always heard the naysayers, rugby league, it's dead. It's dying. It won't be around in a few. All these, I haven't heard that much recently.
No,
it's that's a worry.
Well. Yeah.
No, like you said, I like to hear that it's dying, because whenever I hear it, it actually in reality means the game's thriving.
Very true. All right, mate. Well, I think that brings us to the end of another week.
It does indeed. But thanks for your time, Greg.
Thanks for listening. Again, thanks for our listeners out there.
Yep. Once again, as always, good luck to your sporting team this weekend, be it local or your professional sports team. I know netball finals. My daughter's netball final tomorrow, first semi-final tomorrow, elimination. So, yeah, you have to leave it all out. There's no point, no tomorrow if they lose. So, yeah, but good luck to everyone's teams, and yeah, happy sports following.
Whoever you follow, have a fantastic weekend.